promoting scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. Were included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Well, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And greetings from Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, editor-in-chief and founder of Technocracy News and Trends. Today is July 29th, 2019. And today, being Monday, we have some special stories today that are of a lot of interest, I think. You remember back in the late 1960s that a book was published called The Population Bomb. It was written by an entomologist, actually, by the name of Paul Ehrlich. And he predicted in his book that the world is going to rapidly be overpopulated to the point where resources will not be able to keep up with maintaining the level of population, and people would starve en masse, and it would be a horrible dystopian future. Well, he was wrong. He not only was wrong, but he was wrong on every count. In fact, nothing that he said in his book back then ever came to pass. But people today still look at that book and say, see, we told you, population is going up, it's going to keep going up, and why by the year 2100 is we're going to have 9 billion or 10 billion or 12 billion people in the world, and there won't be enough resources to take care of everybody. Well, I've been talking about this for at least 10 years now on how the demographic charts have been turning down and that just the opposite is going to actually take place in given time. Overall population moves very slowly for a number of reasons. There's many demographic forces that change the way the total population look. Currently, for instance, with the baby boomer generation reaching full maturity, there's an excess of people in the upper age brackets. People are living longer, working longer, and compared to the younger demographic, it seems awfully large, and it is. But now an article has appeared that notes that the birth rate in the United States is hitting record lows. This is going to drive the sustainable development crowd nuts. On the other hand, they've been predicting for years or suggesting that population needed to be cut down so that the world will be more sustainable and there'll be more resources for those that are here. So you can't imagine what they're complaining about now, but they're still banking on scaring people with the overpopulation mantra. But this article states the general fertility rate in the United States continued to decline last year. This report comes from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, CDC. They have a Center for Health Statistics that measures these things. The report says the 2018 general fertility rate fell to another all-time low for the United States. The report found that the general fertility rate dropped 2% between 2017 and 2018 among girls and women aged 15 to 44 nationwide. The fertility rate is below the level needed to replace the population. In 2017, the total fertility rate for the United States continued to dip below what's needed for the population to replace itself, according to a separate report published by the National Center for Health Statistics in January. America's fertility rate and the number of births nationwide have been on the decline in recent years. A report of provisional birth data published by the National Center for Health Statistics in May showed the number of births last year dropping to its lowest level in about three decades. That's 30 years. Now the center's latest report presents selected highlights from that 2018 birth data. The data showed that the teen birth rate in particular for ages 15 to 19 fell 7% from 2017 to 2018. When examined by race, the data showed that teen births declined by 4% for black teenagers and 8% for white and Hispanic teens. It's interesting to note over a period of several years that the teen birth rate has virtually collapsed. It's down almost 50% from several years ago. Now, that's never been a real significant statistic in the first place because that does represent a demographic where most females are having children outside of wedlock. This does cause great stress on society and on the children, on the family unit as well, but that demographic has basically just collapsed in the last several years. The implications of this, economically speaking, are obvious. The economy grows according to the number of skilled workers it has to perform tasks, to build things, to work in factories, to invent new things, etc. Without young people, it's very difficult to support the older generation. We see this same kind of demographic happening around the world as well. Japan, for instance, is beside itself with the burgeoning retiree class and the shrinking working class. It's actually shrinking in real numbers now. And their economy is meeting that brick wall. They're not very well prepared for it in many ways, but the economic implications are dire because it means a shrinkage of the economy. Less people working means shrinkage of the economy. Just that simple. The same thing is happening in Germany. Germany is experiencing the lowest birth rate in decades. Within a few years, their population is going to be inverted. There's only a few countries left in the world that are growing in number, but they're far and few between. Malaysia is one, India is another. The rest of the world is still lagging behind. So world population at this point is not going to explode as was suggested in Paul Ehrlich's Population Bomb book of 1968. In fact, just the opposite seems to be taking place right now. By 2050, if you extrapolate these demographics out, you actually see a numerically contracting population of the world. So instead of having 9 billion people, as many are predicting at the United Nations, we may well have less than we have today. The next story concerns genetically modified organisms, GMO. We've talked a lot about GMO in the past. There's a lot of discussion going on in the world today over genetically modified foods and the like. We've talked about the so-called editing technology called CRISPR, C-R-I-S-P-R, that allows geneticists to literally edit the DNA that controls the behavior of cells. And while this is, on one hand, marvelously wonderful and complex technology, on the other hand, it has great risk in it. Because if you can control the engine of life, you can control an awful lot of stuff, and this has people worried. Well, there's a new technology now that may, in the end, be even more disturbing than the CRISPR technology, and it's called LOCKR, L-O-C-K-R. I won't even bother to tell you what that acronym stands for, but it is an acronym that the geneticists have figured out for it. And LOCKR is a different approach to genetic modification in that it's based on synthetically created proteins created in laboratories. And scientists believe now that they can create these individual proteins, very specialized proteins that do not exist in nature, to control the behavior of cells in your body or in any living organism for that matter. So the article states that scientists have invented the synthetic protein designed to control the inner workings of cells. I'll stress here, the inner workings of cells. In a pair of papers published yesterday in Nature magazine, the researchers demonstrate how the tool can be used to tweak gene expression, orchestrate protein binding events, and cue functional changes in the cell in response to environmental conditions. Bobby Langan, the co-author of both studies, had this to say: cells receive stimuli, then have to figure out what to do about it. They use natural systems to tune gene expression or degrade proteins, for example. The newly designed tool, which is named LOCKR, as I said, fiddles with the inbuilt systems by introducing bioactive peptides into their circuitry. The peptides only pop out when released by specific molecular keys. LOCKR consists of six helixes tightly bound to form a cage. One of the helical structures, bound more loosely than the others, can be displaced by a specific molecule, the key. When the key clicks into place, the helix moves aside and reveals a peptide customized to perform a particular function. In their demonstrative studies, the researchers use LOCKR to trigger cell death, degrade specific proteins, and direct the movement of materials through living cells. I'm going to stop here and point out the significance of the last statement. I don't think we need to know any more. One of the very first things that the scientists figure out they could do with this locker technology is to trigger cell death. In other words, as the protein comes into a cell and tricks the cell into thinking it's time to die, the cell dies. Now, this could have interesting implications, for instance, for cancer. If you wanted to target certain cells, if they were identifiable in the body, being able to trigger death in those cells would be potentially a good thing. On the other hand, for the sake of control, for the sake of population reduction and all kinds of other things, this technology has a very dark underside. It could potentially be used to kill cells and anybody. Technocrats have no ethical or moral boundaries as they make new inventions and discover new things to put into practice. Now, they may have known about this possibility for some time, but now they've actually pressed it into reality. And they've developed a way now to synthetically create proteins in the laboratory that will cause your cells to jump and dance according to how those proteins are engineered. So this does not require a change in your DNA structure. Nothing is being modified directly to your DNA. But when a synthetic protein is injected into your body, it will cause your cells to behave a certain way. In other words, to turn on and turn off certain genetic expressions. It's a complicated topic for sure, but I sense that this may be even more dangerous than the so-called CRISPR technology, which makes edits, and in many cases permanent edits, to the human genome. The last story we're going to discuss today is one that has been in the news before. A year and a half ago, Technocracy News and Trends ran a story called Saudi Arabia, $500 billion smart city, 33 times the size of New York. And this story fell out of the news cycle for the last year and a half, but is back. The headline today is NEOM, that's the name of this new city in Saudi Arabia, is going to be the world's largest smart city and is rising again in Saudi Arabia. In my opinion, this is little more than a modern-day Babel. It's attempting to rise off the desert floor in the Mideast, intentionally built from the ground up with the latest smart city technology. They expect it will be run almost entirely by robots and AI. Back in February of 2018, the article that appeared that more or less introduced NEOM to the world said that Saudi Arabia is the world's largest oil exporter, but falling oil prices have made it more difficult for the country to pay its oil workers. Now the Saudi Arabian government has come up with a project that would give its economy a boost, a $500 billion megacity that will connect to Jordan and Egypt and be powered completely by renewable energy. In October 2017, Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman announced the project, calling it NEOM. He was at the Future Investment Initiative Conference in Riyadh. It will be financed by the Saudi government and private investors, according to Reuters. The country is now starting to award contracts to local construction companies for the development of five palaces. Of course, that would be the first thing that they would erect would be the palaces for them, the elite. Set to be located on the Red Sea coast, the palaces will be for the king, crown prince, other senior royals. According to Reuters, the buildings will feature traditional Moroccan-style architecture, Islamic designs, and colorful ceramic tiles. The complex of palaces will include a marina, helipads, and of course, a golf course in the hot Saudi Arabian desert. Well, as I said, NEOM fell out of the news cycle for some time, but now is back, and things might be changing soon. Today's article says the walls are covered with graffiti in the sleepy fishing village. It's here in northwest Saudi Arabia that Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman wants investors to put their money to realize his $500 billion vision for the region. Called NEOM, it promises to be the most freewheeling part of the kingdom with state-of-the-art resorts and smart technologies to run the robots. But it's also here where the risks of the 33-year-old prince's grand plan for his country are writ large. NEOM is the boldest pillar of a social and economic transformation that so far has seen at least as many delays as successes. Indeed, the question since the prince announced the vast development at an extravaganza in 2017 has been whether it can become a reality. A three-day trip to the region, which is roughly the size of Massachusetts, showed the scale of the task as well as the potential. Many of the locals who have lived there for years are looking forward to some prosperity, while others are concerned they will be removed and their homes bulldozed. The area has stunning, untouched shorelines with waves rippling in the turquoise water. Purple volcanic mountains loom over the Red Sea. Historic sites include Awadi, where locals believe Moses landed when he crossed over from Egypt, alighting in a valley along the water. Construction workers have already descended on the small towns, and some building has started. The small Neom Bay Airport, with its gleaming white interior, opened for commercial flights last month. Workers were driving construction equipment along the roads, and I Heart Neom signs sits outside a heavily secured base camp of temporary housing for employees. The road leading to sleek white homes lined with solar-powered streetlights. It's not only a vision on paper, said Lojin Alarbi, a 25-year-old Neom employee who works as a business analyst for the sports sector. It's already happening. In an interview with Bloomberg in October 2017, Prince Mohammed said that by 2030, the completion date for his transition to Saudi Arabia 2.0, Neom will contribute $100 billion to economic output. The name comes from Neo, meaning new, and M, the first letter Arabic for future, he said. There will be 12 small cities or towns next to the sea in Neom, and others in the valleys and mountains. He said in another interview a year later, as well as an industrial zone, a huge port, and several airports. So Neom is rising again. It's received a lot of financing in the last 6 months to move forward. The odds of it ever being finished, in my opinion, are slim to none. But the fact that the Saudis are even attempting this project reveals two things. Number one, the smart city technology really has infected the entire planet. And number two, that Islam is very much dedicated to using technology for the control of people. If this smart city were to come alive and actually fulfill its original vision and dream, it would be no less than 33 times as large as New York City. You heard me right. The land that's laid out right now for it and the architectural plans on the board call for a city that will be 33 times larger than New York City. And they intend to use smart technology from top to bottom, from the ground up, to control everything in the city, including the people. Where will these people come from? Well, there's not that many people living in Saudi Arabia or any of the other countries close thereby, but the intent of the kingdom is to draw people from all around the world, like is happening, of course, right now in the United Arab Emirates and the city of Dubai. But they intend to draw people from around the world to put up business headquarters and regional offices and new industries and so on to populate the city. So they intend to be a global city from day one and to have all of the smart technology built in it from day one. And they would hope to make it an economic center of the planet. Pretty ambitious plans that they have. Well, you can keep an eye on Neom. It's the ultimate expression of smart city technology and of sustainable development because they plan on having it powered completely by alternative energy. No oil whatsoever, even though oil is sitting just a little bit below the surface of the country. They're not going to use the oil. They're not going to use their natural gas. They're going to use solar and wind power to completely fuel the city. Well, we'll see how this works out. As I said, my guess is not very well, but they're trying it anyway. Well, I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll see you next time. We'll be right back.